Susan Sinclair, Meal One. And if I could ask you first of all, Susan, to tell me something about your family background in Nuremberg, I believe.
Yes.
Before, in the 1930s, as you were growing up.
Right. My father was a businessman who had joined his father's business and had inherited that. They lived the typical sort of middle-class life. They had plenty of staff, and it was a very happy, relaxed childhood. Anything unpleasant they kept from us as far as they could. And I had two sisters, and we had a lot of friends. And when you speak about the 30s, of course, after Hitler's arrival on the scene, our friends tended to be more Jewish than mixed as they had been before, although we still had some non-Jewish friends, but that caused them difficulties.
Do you remember life sort of before Hitler was really strong? How different it would have been then? You must have been very young.
Yes. Well, I was 9 when Hitler came to power. I don't remember too much. I remember like normal school life and lots of uncles and aunts and family and a very happy life, and my parents met every Friday evening with members of the family, every Saturday with friends, and the friends' evening was always hilarious when it was in our house. I could hear them, and in the morning we'd have all sorts of presents, and we would sometimes sneak in and see what was left over. But it was a very happy, relaxed childhood, lots of holidays, went away. Easter, summer, Christmas. I started to ski when I was about 5, and in Austria and in Switzerland, and it was all a happy childhood.
Had your parents lived in Germany a long time?
Oh yes, generations. They hadn't always lived in Bavaria, at least on my mother's side. They had lived in Thuringia, Meiningen, and they had come to Nuremberg when she was a little girl, but on my father's side they'd been there for generations, and they saw themselves as German. They kept very few things, Jewish things, and they were just part of the life there in Germany. Nuremberg's a small town. My father would come home every day for lunch, he'd go for a walk, and afterwards he would play table tennis with my mother, and then he'd go back.
So, when were you aware, of sort of anti-Semitism, the growing anti-Semitism, would you say, Susan?
Well, I changed schools when I was 10. I went to the girls' high school, and particularly one teacher, but I think probably one or two others, were Nazi Party members of even pre-Hitler days, and they were very nasty to us. And we had to sit on the back benches, and the desks at the back, and not so much with my fellow pupils, although there again one of them was a Hitler Youth group leader, and we had always met, 2 or 3 of us, to go to school together and said good morning, and then suddenly it started, she put out her right arm, Heil Hitler, and the others would say Heil Hitler and I would still say good morning. But eventually I didn't go with them anymore because I thought it's only going to cause problems to me. yes, there were some of the girls all had to join the Hitler Youth, and so they had other activities which excluded us. One of the things they did was sports was of great importance in Hitler's Germany, and you had to work for your sports badge, which was, I think, probably via the Hitler Youth, and it had certain standards which you had to reach. But the Jewish sports club I joined simply had a Jewish sports badge with the same achievement required, and I took that, and I worked for that, and I was a very proud moment when I got it, and I didn't feel that it was in any way inferior to theirs. It was just, that was my group of people, and I wasn't in part of theirs. Gradually there was a sort of separation. There were some children who used to call Stinking Jew, and being rather defiant of a girl, I used to say, well, I'm a Jew, but you stink. And that caused some fights. And I think on the whole I didn't let it get me down. And there was always a great support at home.
Was there?
Yes, and my parents, of course, were very unhappy about our having to put up with these things, but they washed over me on the whole. I stuck up for myself, and I had Jewish friends, and it wasn't so important. Not then.
Did you go to synagogue? You know, were you a religious family?
Not at all, but I had a religious phase, I think, due to a very handsome young rabbi who started synagogue. And yes, I started saying Hebrew prayers, and my parents looked on with sort of mild amusement. I also briefly joined a Zionist youth group, and I really felt that that wasn't for me. I didn't really fancy going there, so I left again. And
was that becoming a big thing, you know, with the rise of Hitler Zionism in Germany?
No, there were several Jewish youth clubs, and this was one of them. And my elder sister had joined a different one, and I really wanted to do something other than she was doing. And that's what made me join the Zionist Youth Club. And my parents said to me, does this really interest you? And I said, oh yes, of course. But then I asked myself. And I did go to service, but it was me. I don't remember what period of time, but during this sort of religious phase. And I was confirmed. My elder sister and I both were. Confirmation was at 15, so it was just before I came to England. And the Nuremberg Synagogue was really quite a big synagogue, just in my memory. It's very big. And there were about 30 girls, all in white, being confirmed together. And I had to be the first one to say something in front of the whole congregation, one of the religious things that one had to say. And I was terribly self-conscious. And the other girls were supposed to join in, and I was so afraid that they wouldn't. But they did. And I had to start it off. But my parents went to services on my holidays. And they really didn't know much either. There hadn't been anything much kept in either of their families when they were younger. In fact, one day they sent us to a friend of my father's on a Friday night to see how Jews handle Friday nights. I enjoyed that, but it wasn't part of my regular life.
Very interesting what you were saying about your education and how you were put towards the back of the class. Would you say that, you know, your education was suffering directly as a result of this? You know, your grades, for instance.
There were various things, like I used to write good essays, and before Hitler, I used to sometimes get a form prize or something like that, and I suddenly got very bad marks. But we had the teacher we had, it's the one I mentioned, who was an old member of the Stormtroopers, and he simply said, Jews can't write good German, therefore you cannot have a good essay. And he'd give me very bad marks. And in other respects, for some reason, we weren't allowed to partake in Latin. I just said to my parents, I expect it's because the Jewish children always come top, and they don't want to show them up. And I did something else, I think there were other languages instead. It's a long time ago. And apart from that, well, it was the sports, I don't know. I think I sort of felt I never quite knew whether Ben Maxwell was right or not. You couldn't really get a proper picture because you didn't know what the attitude was of the various teachers, because some who didn't have any strong Nazi feelings still had to play that game. Otherwise, they'd lose their job, or worse. And so you didn't quite know where you were. Okay. And the only grade A's we ever got for religious instruction, that a Jewish teacher would come in to teach us once a week, and he always gave us top marks. He knew what we were suffering otherwise. So that was the only top mark I ever got after about 1933, 34. So, apart from that.
You were saying, with this sort of anti-Semitism and the insults that, you had to endure, did it affect your sense of Jewishness, do you think?
I suppose one became more conscious of being a Jewish. And I think that some of the people who were my friends, their parents talked much more to them about it. Mine very carefully avoided it, and I'm not sure that was right. But, I'm not really sure about that. Yes, my father would talk about Jewish Nobel Prize winners and Jewish musicians and artists and point out the high proportion of Jews in that field and instill a pride, that's quite right, he instilled a pride in us being Jewish and the Jewish history my parents weren't religious Jews, but they were entirely conscious Jews. Certainly my father was proud of being Jewish. I think, I'm not sure about my mother, I think maybe she thought it was a bit inconvenient. But he would talk to us and he would give us books on the subject and discuss it and encourage questions. Yes, there was a lot of that.
When you went on to secondary school, did things become more difficult?
Yes,
for
well
you?
That coincided more or less with Hitler's period in Germany, about the same time. And in fact, a few years after I started high school, they didn't even accept Jewish children. And yes, it's that I've been talking about, actually. It was only during that period. It was high school, secondary school. I suppose I started in 1934. And again, I was really not aware that there could be something personally against me. I was just preparing for the entrance examinations and hoping to get good results without really thinking of the Jewish aspect of it.
But I think you moved schools, didn't you? When did you move to another school?
That was right at the end for one term. In summer 1938, we were all chucked out of school. And I went briefly to a Jewish school in Fürth, which is the town which is attached to Nuremberg. It's like one town almost. And there were two Jewish schools there, and I went to one of them. And incidentally, Henry Kissinger was another one.
Did you know him?
No, because I believe he went to the other school, but one of my old school friends says, no, he went to our school, but I, no, certainly not. I don't remember him at all. But he's the right age, the right generation. And, I went to that school, and it was different. We had, at least you didn't have to put up with anti-Semitism, but things got so difficult that my parents at that point decided I had better learn something practical in case I had to earn a living. And I learned, I started a cookery course and I started a sewing course, but all of them only lasted 2 or 3 weeks. But I don't know what else I did, the various practical things. Because then there was Kristallnacht and the pogroms and everything was destroyed and life as I had known it stopped.
Could you tell me about your experience of Kristallnacht?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Kristallnacht.
Yes. Well, the origin of it was that a young Jew had killed a German diplomat in Paris, but it was really just an excuse. They were very well prepared, and during the night of November the 9th, about, I don't remember, a number of men, sort of somewhere between 7 and 10, came bursting into our house and started smashing up everything. They locked my parents into the bathroom, and they were desperate what was happening to their girls. There were only two of us at home at the time. My older sister was away at college. And my younger sister and I shared a bedroom, and I saw that her bed was full of glass and mirror glass and everything that had been smashed, and the furniture was turned upside down. And then they pulled me out of bed and tore my nightdress to shreds. And I was really so self-conscious as a 15-year-old that I found that absolutely awful. Roars of laughter from these young men who seemed as if they were drunk. And they said to me, "Well, get your clothes. Where are they?" And I said, "No, you'll go." And this sort of heavy continental furniture. And, okay, go and get them. So I went to get them. And as I went up to it, they threw it over. They got behind it and threw it over. And, in fact, it certainly would have killed me if they hadn't turned quite a large table upside down first. And for a short time, the table held the wardrobe, and I crawled out underneath. And then they got tired of what they were doing to us and smashed up the rest of the place. And all this, I didn't know what was happening to my parents because they were screaming and shouting, but it was because they didn't know what was happening to us. And it was really awful. And they then left to smash up somebody else's house. And there was really everything that we had was broken, smashed, and destroyed. And we did a bit of clearing up as best we could. We had a maid who lived in who got onto the back, in the rear balcony, and sat shivering in the November night, as well as a girl who had come to stay with me. She was somebody I'd met on holiday. She had a Jewish stepfather and a Nazi aunt, and she'd just come from the Nazi aunt, and we'd had some discussions on the subject, and I tried to tell her that it wasn't a good system. And as she saw it firsthand, she was very frightened. And, well, we sort of picked ourselves up, and I don't know whether we got any sleep the rest of the night, and I suppose we did, and among all the glass. the next day, there was going to be a big rally in Nuremberg. Now, Nuremberg was the main Nazi center. First of all, it was the place where they held their big annual rallies of thousands and thousands of people in a big stadium built specially for that. And also the local Gauleiter, who was the council leader, was a man called Julius Streicher, who was the number one Jew baiter and who was responsible for the very anti-Semitic newspaper called Der Stürmer, which had nothing but horrible Jewish caricatures and lies. And my parents really thought that Nuremberg was going to be hell the next evening and they should get out of there. We had a driver and who said he knew all sorts of back ways into Munich. We wanted to go to Munich because my father had made friends with the British consul there, who had told him, any time you get into trouble, as any difficulties come, I'll put you up. And so we drove to Munich, and we could see that cars were being stopped going out of Munich. And our driver said, no, I know a way in, but they were cleverer than us. And they stopped, I think they were in all the roads into Munich. And they stopped the car and just shone in torches and said, are you Jews? And we said, yes. And they took my father out. And he waited a short while by the roadside, and a lorry came with a lot of other Jewish men, and we just bundled him in there, and my mother and we children didn't know what to do next. And my mother said, follow that lorry, and we got to some barracks, and they drove in and we followed, and there was a lot of jeering, and what people were doing in the middle of the night, I have no idea. But when I see film of the French Revolution and these women knitting there while they were being guillotined, it was a bit like that. It was really very common people shrieking and shouting abuse, and it was very frightening. And my younger sister was about, she was about 9 or 10, and my mother followed my father in. And all those men, she just simply marched into the barracks, and we were there with the driver, who was very embarrassed to be with us, and he sort of joined the others and had a cigarette with them, and they came over to us and said, well, you can start walking back in Nuremberg. Well, we've been driving all night, well, for hours at least. Oh, and before that, my father had suddenly given me some papers to tuck into my knickers, which had elastic around the leg, and he said, hide these because I don't have them on me. So he must have been afraid he might be stopped. And I had these papers, my little sister, and my mother didn't seem to come back, and I had no idea what to do. I knew that I couldn't walk back in Nuremberg, so I just stayed put. And eventually my mother came out in a state of absolute desperation. She couldn't find out anything. And so then we tried to get into a hotel, and my parents knew a lot of hotels in Munich, but each one of them had a board outside, no Jews. And by then it was very late, so the early hours of the morning, and my mother wanted to get her children off to bed somewhere. And the doorman of one of the hotels came after us and gave her a slip of paper and said, this is my sister's boarding house. Go there and tell her I send you, George, send you or whatever. And we did that, and she let us in, and she made us whisper, and please stay in your rooms, and I'll look after you, but please don't leave your room until you leave. Well, in the way of children, we went to sleep, and when I woke up in the morning, my mother wasn't there. And then I really got frightened. And she'd left us a note to just stay where we are, where we were. And we stayed there for quite a long time. And she came back. She'd gone back to the barracks. And she couldn't get anywhere. She said, we can't tell you where he is, but we'll send you his ashes. And she really was pretty desperate, and she was only 42, not very old to think of losing your husband. And we went to some friends, and the man had also been arrested at home, and then we decided we would go to a farm where I had spent some holidays, and it was the farm of that girl who had been with us during the night of November the 9th. And it was at Rosenheim, which is an hour or so out of Munich. And my sister and I stayed there. My mother went back to Nuremberg. And we stayed there for some weeks. And Well, I just helped on the farm, and they were wonderful people. The Jewish father, he had been a diplomat and couldn't be, so he went farming. But he was very keen that his children should be brought up with culture. So although the whole household started at 4 or 5 in the morning, by about 7 we had breakfast, and the women would bring their sewing and their vegetable cleaning and so forth, while he read the classics. And we had about an hour of this, and then we carried on working. And I fitted in there very happily. I was really happy there. They were a nice family. I liked them. And they made me part of the family. My younger sister left not long after, because my father's sister, who was living in Switzerland, and her husband, sent their lawyer, who was one of the top people in the Swiss army as well. It was a volunteer army, and he was a fairly high-ranking officer in the Swiss army, a very tall man, a very strong character, who bulldozed his way through all the formalities that my mother had to complete, and got my sister out. He was wise enough to court his wife, so that my sister wouldn't be frightened. And so she had left for Switzerland, and I had to. My mother was working on all kinds of things, visas for other countries, and above all, to get my father released. We found out that he was in Dachau concentration camp, and we found out he was able to write a few words on a postcard, and there were ways of getting people out of concentration camps at that time. You had to have property to give away, to sign away, a business to sign away, and a visa from another country. And all those things my mother with friends was working on.